swinging a fly ball deep in the air left field, and Rochester has gotten right back in this one. Brady House with a three-run home run has gotten the Red Wings on the board. Syracuse's lead down to four. It's 7-3. That came on the ghost fork. It was low in the zone, but wasn't low enough. Brady House with his first home run here with the Rochester Red Wings. And Syracuse still in front by four.
If you play with fire, sometimes you get burned.
The biggest thing is that I feel good. My body feels good, and that's really important. My forkball wasn't very good today, and I was trying out different things, and they just got to me while I was trying out.
Everything good to go with Sanga, set to join the rotation?
Yeah, everything is good so far. Have talked to him today. I talked to Dickie Scott, our AAA manager, just to see, you know, the report there, and everything's positive. You know, obviously he had a grind, he had to work, they made him work, but at the end of the day, it's how he's feeling, and we got to wait, see how today goes, tomorrow, and then hopefully he's with us next time out, but everything is trending in the right direction.
You think he would pitch Friday if he's good?
Yeah, if he's good, there's a good chance he'll pitch Friday.
All right, we're back. So we started out this show talking about, obviously, the weekend, the stub your toe weekend. And you know what's amazing? That the Marlins, and it's not the same to the same degree, but the Marlins have been breaking the Mets, you know what, since 1998, since the year after they won the World Series. Look back to the 98 Mets and some of their bad losses down the stretch that year. Marlins, Expos, who became the Nats, and the Nats who played a part in the 07 collapse, the Marlins in the 07 collapse. They've been such an annoying team. Anytime the Mets have been in a race, it seems like there's always a Miami annoying or Nats annoying loss. They play over their heads for a weekend or a game, and these unlikely heroes. Think of a name, Jonathan Albaladejo. Look that up. He was like, the Mets couldn't hit him down the stretch in 2007. And he had some good stuff. He goes to the Yankees. He couldn't get anybody out. I mean, maybe I'm exaggerating there. But anyway, so we talked about that. We talk about stub your toe losses. But part of what we also talked about is the fact that the Mets are in this strange position where they're still trying to figure stuff out. It's been a learning experience for Stearns because he came into an organization that had so many question marks. And his entire front office is new, and the Mets have all these different parts from all these different regimes, and they're trying to compete and win at the same time, and they had that historically bad May and that historically good June, and it's just been a topsy-turvy first half. And to the team's credit, the organization's credit, here they are, they're right with everybody else and right within shooting distance of the Braves, and the Braves are coming to town this weekend. And Kodai Senga's name comes up. So now you have forgotten, I have forgotten Kodai Senga. The Mets basically, when you heard shoulder in spring training, or at least when I heard it, I was like, that's not good. Now, you could say all you want, it's a strain, they got arrested, shoot it up. We all heard when he was signed, Senga, that he had some arm issues. And that was it was something that I think they worked out in the contract. It was never really clear how that all came about, but he came with some health concerns, and he has a weird delivery, and I wouldn't be surprised if, as this five-year contract goes down, and I know that there's an opt-out, and I think now that he's been hurt, that opt-out is unlikely after the third year, so, you know, the Mets are going to be stuck with this guy for the long haul, and I shouldn't use the word stuck, because that could be a good thing, but Senga come into the year was supposed to be the Mets ace, and I think that was a loose term because when he was signed by Billy Epler, you had Scherzer and Verlander at the top of the rotation, and Quintana was supposed to be that solid veteran number three. So you were bringing Senga in to be a back-in-the-rotation starter and develop himself into something that potentially could be the third banana over the next couple of years behind Scherzer, behind Verlander. Well, we all know what happened to Scherzer, who seems to be really falling off the cliff in Texas. Verlander was sent out last year. Woo, Mets really died. I mean, the more you look, and obviously Steve Cohen's money played into those deals about a year ago around this time. Mets dodged a major bullet. This situation with Verlander and Scherzer still on this team, imagine what we'd be talking about. Totally different situation. And Senga developed himself into, very quickly, and at the expense of Chris Bassett, may I add, who I still like and I still think has value and still continues to give you innings and quality innings, even though he may not be sexy. Senga developed himself into a top 20 pitcher in the sport. He struck out a lot of guys. He had a really good ground ball rate. His walks were a problem early on, and he got better as the year went on. And there was a lot of hope coming into this season. And you have to admire the way the guy works, and he acclimated himself to the culture and the team. And Japanese players are totally different than the American player, where I think there's a certain amount of humbleness and respect that the culture emanates that we all could learn from. So I have nothing against Senga. But you all knew when he came over, and I first guessed the move. I said, look, I really wanted Bassett. The Mets were at a position at that time where they were still trying to go for it now. And I thought Bassett on a three-year deal, a very reasonable three-year deal, may I add, was a no-brainer. And the Mets moved on, and whether that was because of his playoff performance and his bad performance down the stretch in a couple of games, we'll never know. Billy Epler's not around anymore. Maybe one day when he's on Baseball Night in New York, he'll bring it up and talk about it. It's possible. I would ask him about it. But they saw Senga as someone with better upside than Bassett. And to a certain degree, I understand that. But now he's got a shoulder issue. And he's been out more than half the year. And you heard the clip coming in. He did not have an impressive outing in Syracuse. And you always want to be careful with rehab outings. You have guys like Tyler McGill that go down there and just lights out, blow everybody away. And then they come up to the big leagues and they're still Tyler McGill. He's still doing the same things that drive you bananas. So it doesn't mean that he's all of a sudden found something. I mean, there was a great article in The Athletic, and I can't remember, and I think I mentioned it a couple of shows ago, which discussed the gap between AAA and the majors now, especially because it's littered with a lot of pitchers that just don't really know where the ball's going, that are just throwing hard, or projects that have good stuff but really don't know how to hone it in. I mean, truly, teams have taken the minor leagues and taken the focus of winning away from the minor leagues and turned it into a scrimmage, really, which stinks for all those loyal fans in some of these towns, because I've been to minor league games, not just here locally with Trenton and Binghamton and things like that, but I've been to, back in the day, back in the 90s, to Rochester and Scranton Wilkes-Barre, and I remember going over to Binghamton, down to Binghamton back in 08, and how pissed those fans were, those loyal fans, because the Mets had the audacity to take Daniel Murphy away from them, who was having a big year, and they needed him because they were in a race for the Eastern League. But, you know, there's some passionate, loyal fans, and at the end of the day, you're just a pit stop on the way to the big club. The big club is where it's all about. But the point here is that Senga goes down. He does not put up good numbers. I wasn't there. I'm not a scout. I have no idea if anything that you heard on the intro here with what Mendoza said and Senga's interpreter, and, you know, you heard the blast off the ghost fork that didn't fork. I have no idea what to expect on Friday. And when you look at the Mets rotation, which now you don't have a problem accommodating a pitcher that needs extra rest and is always probably going to need that unless he really assimilates to the American game, which some of his countrymen like Masahiro Tanaka and others did, Hiroki Kuroda, they did, and they became just like normal pieces to the rotation. And eventually, maybe that's what Senga does. But right now, especially this year, especially with the injury, especially with his shoulder, which is a huge red flag, you can't expect him to give you very many innings. You can't expect him to go deep. And you probably are going to need six starters. So right now, what does that look like? That's Severino, that's Quintana, that's Manaea, that's Peterson, that's Scott, and that's Senga. Now, I don't know if Buto gets into the mix, if they acquire a couple of relievers. Is Buto, because now he's been doing shorter outings, one or two innings, is he out of the mix? Has he gone the Seth Lugo route? Nobody's really brought that up to Mendoza. We don't know. Maybe that's a question if they acquire a couple of bullpen arms. That's one of the questions I'd bring up to Stearns during those press conversations. Now, I think Scott, with an innings limit, another guy that you saw just a couple of weeks ago, had to be taken out with 75 pitches, despite the fact that he was dominating the Pirates lineup. That's a guy that I'd move to the bullpen, maybe. Buto seems to be a guy that could go a little bit deeper. He was pitching pretty effectively. I'm not the guy making the decisions. So that's going to be. Now, McGill's name is still in the conversation. McGill's down in the minors, and I'm bringing him up over here. He's actually not pitching poorly down there. You know, he's got a 2.30 ERA, striking out over 14 per nine. I mean, he's still walking too many batters, four per nine. But, you know, he's down there doing what you'd expect a big league pitcher to do, pitching in AAA. So I don't know where he comes into play. But here's the problem with Senga. You know that Senga has shown, you know he has the potential to be, if not the ace of the rotation, 1A. Because right now Severino's the guy. Even though his numbers don't scream ace, he's the guy that's the ace of the rotation. I think Quintana has his moments, but Quintana has a lot of Bartolo Colon in him. I think he has really good outings, then he'll give you a stinker, and it makes the overall numbers look much worse. And to a certain degree, I think Manaea falls into that as well. You've got a lot of guys in this rotation that are basically slightly above league average, number three, number four types. Senga and Severino has that pedigree. We don't know how much is left, because there is some inconsistencies with Severino too. But Senga's the guy that proved it. Senga was a top 20 pitcher in the league last year. And his peripherals of strikeouts and ground balls were right up there with all the elite. So he has it in him. But that was with a healthy shoulder. That was with a curated schedule from day one in spring training that mapped it out so he had the proper rest. And let's face it, some of that performance happened in a low-stress, no-pennant race August and September. He wasn't that great early in the year. Now, in the middle, in the meet, June, July, he was getting better. So I shouldn't say that, because they were still dreaming of doing what the team last year was dreaming of doing, what this team this year is doing, which is getting themselves back in the race and being relevant down the stretch. So now you're bringing back Senga. Let's just assume for argument's sake it's going to happen Friday, because it sounds like it is. And if he goes out on Friday and he's bad, and the Mets lose to the Braves, big game, big series. God forbid the Mets go in that game already losing one to the Braves or being on a little losing streak. That becomes a problem. And he doesn't have his command, his control. The ghost fork is just sitting there on the tee. You know, the fork is the instead of being the fork, it's the food on the plate there for everybody to tee off on and have a meal, the hitters to have a meal. All of a sudden, Matt Olson and Riley and Orlando Arcia and all these Braves hitters who couldn't hit the side of a barn and playing 500 ball for nearly half a year all of a sudden look like the Bravos that we all have come to know and hate here in New York for the last few years. You have yourself a problem, and you really can't do anything with Senga. He's either going to be in the rotation or he's going to be on the injured list. I don't think the bullpen is an option. Can he do what Hauser's doing? I mean, you can't, because he's a guy that needs rest. He's a guy that needs time probably to warm up. So he has one. Hauser at least, and he did a little bit of it before, Hauser has embraced the Trevor Williams role. Buto has been the Seth Lugo of this club. And Senga has one role, and it's to be in the rotation. At the very least, you hope he could give you a number three, number four. You know, maybe he's not going to give you the end of the year elite numbers that you saw, because he's been out so long and he's, you know, who knows how healthy that shoulder is. But he can start and that's it. And not only can he start, he's taking starts away because of the six-man rotation from other potential Severino, Quintana, Manaea starts. So it's a ripple effect, and this is a complicated situation. Now, you have no choice. The Mets can't just shelve. I mean, unless he's bad, and I guess there is one scenario. He's bad, and they deem like, hey, I could see this happening. He has a couple of bad starts. You're still in the race, but things are tenuous. And Mendoza and Stearns come out and say, look, it's just not working. He needs more time. He needs to go back on the injured list. No, he's not done. No, he doesn't need shoulder surgery. But, you know, between the shutdown and the ramp up and the time of the year that we're in, and Senga's the kind of guy he's going to be a team guy. The Japanese are team players. I mean, they want to be successful. They want to make money. They're human beings. They're no different than everybody else. But these are extremely, the culture, it's embedded. And I know this because I know people who work for Japanese companies, Americans. They are so committed to the cause of the organization. And if I'm wrong, please email me, because I'm sure there are those in the audience that may have vastly more experiences with Japanese culture than me, but that's been my experience. And that's what I also read and see and hear from Japanese pitchers like Senga. And maybe that's changing with a new generation of younger Japanese stars, but, and we've had Jim Allen on the program, it would be a great question for him. So this is really going to be, and I said this is a fascinating couple of weeks coming up with big games, with decisions on the trade deadline, with Pete and the Pete Alonso story, with now Senga being added to the equation. And if Senga's like, hey, I was just working on stuff, I don't care if I give up, you know, five runs to some no-name 4A guy playing for Rochester, I don't care. I just want to get my work in. And then all of a sudden he comes up here and he looks like Senga from last year. Then this, you could throw this show in the trash. It'll be long forgotten. You could probably listen to it and say what a dope Mike is, but it'll be long, 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 long forgotten. But that's a huge risk, and this is going to be a story. I could see us having this conversation, a written piece, an emergency podcast, just like Pete Alonso, a topic that we'll keep bringing up over and over and over again. I can see it. And the timing is so bad. The Senga situation, yeah, you could say, well, Mike, it's almost like acquiring a big arm at the deadline. And I understand that, but a big arm at the deadline is usually a healthy arm that's been successful all year. The biggest risk there is the chaos you create in that person's life by trading them from one city to the other in the middle of the year. And that the fact of the matter is, there's a lot of things that go on in between starts for those guys that matter, like living your life, your family, being settled, that sometimes become difficult when you are traded at deadline. But that's another story for another day. So it will be really interesting to see. I am not confident right now as we speak on this Sunday. And it's not just because of this Syracuse start. I've been thinking about this for a while, that we're going to see vintage Senga. I mean, what a hard assignment. He comes back. I'm sure he's going to be, on 80 pitches? Which for him, 80 pitches, if he's off with his command, that could be three innings. So think about the ripple effect. I mean, you've got to have Hauser ready to go. And that's probably what they're going to do. I mean, if they have to burn some bullpen leading up to that because of the Subway Series, maybe they bring up an arm. I think they just got this kid, White was his name, from the Giants. Alex White, is that right? Pitcher? I don't know if that's the right name. Let me see. No, I can't remember. I can't remember the guy's name. Look at me. I'll get it before the show is out. See, that's a bad job, by me. I should have the guy's name. The Mets just acquired off of waivers. I mean, I know they've Stearns has done a lot of these little moves, like Logan Porter, the catcher, gave him a big league deal to be just stashed to AAA. I mean, that's the Cohen money factor there. Big league contract or something like that. But I can't find this guy. Let me see over here. I'm getting completely sidetracked, by the way. Yeah. Alex Young. Where did I get White? Alex Young. Yeah. Maybe they bring that kid up. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure what to see. I'm fascinated by Senga. I mean, that is for Mets fans. You know, I know Friday looks like it's going to be a nice day, and it's still the summer and summer weekends, man. DVR the baseball and watch it when you get home. If you want to know the score and watch it, great. If you like to be one of those that stays away from social media while you're out. I mean, every restaurant has some kind of TV on the background. It's always hard to get away from a sporting event when you go to a restaurant or you're out and about, but or text. I mean, forget it. If you have buddies that text you complaining like I do, then as soon as you see a text from certain people, you're like, oh, something bad's going on. Like, I have people on my list that if I see a text or a DM on Twitter show up on my email, I know it's bad. Because they always contact me when it's bad. You don't hear from them when they're good. So the minute you see that text, you're like, well, something's not right. And all you can hope is that they're complaining about something that they really shouldn't be. So to me, Friday is appointment television for Mets fans to see Senga and what Senga has. I'm fascinated by it. I really am, to be frank. Now, I had promised a big announcement, and it centers around a couple of things as we wrap up here on the latest edition of the Talking Mets podcast. So first, MLB draft happened. We haven't talked about it here at the Talking Mets podcast. There's some great resources. Our good friend, you know, somebody that I know for over 20 years, Joe DiMeo, does great stuff over at SMY.TV. His podcast with Connor Rogers is great. I'm sure if you're listening to this, you're more than likely subscribed to that. So you don't need my endorsement. You know, that's SMY. They're the big fish. I'm the little guy. But anyway, I give it because it's important to credit people who do good work. So, and that's what I'd like to do. And they do a good job of giving you a clearinghouse of information about what they know about these guys. Now, my problem with talking draft, and I've done it in my career on the radio, and I used to have a great contact, because back in the day when blogs were all over the place, they had some really great draft blogs. There was a guy named Frank Pilateri that used to come on the show all the time back in the day, and he was a scout. He knew what was going on, and that was always like, that was a go-to. But there's very few people. I mean, even I'll be honest, the content creators that do it now, for the most part, they're giving you information that you could probably just go out and read. Because really, unless you get a real baseball insider, and it's hard to get a scout to come on because they don't want to put their stuff, their name to stuff out there, because it's part of the job that could get you in trouble. So sometimes I reach out to them, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? But in the end, it's all projection. I mean, nobody knew what Brandon Nimmo could become. And what Brandon Nimmo has become is way different than what he's been profiled with multiple times. I mean, he's gone from fourth outfielder to leadoff guy, to moneyball guy that does a lot of things that necessarily don't look sexy on the field, to really an impact hitter and leader and great teammate. So we haven't talked about it, but what we decided, now, if you remember, we have our first contributor to Beyond the Mic, a good friend of mine, David Mills. David has done radio in his career. He's not on radio anymore, but he's done radio in his career. And big Mets fan. Knows people in the baseball industry, knows people in the scouting community, and it's a guy that has, a little bit older than me, so he's got a little bit more experience watching this team and watching baseball. And he's a huge Mets fan, but he's balanced and fair and honest, and with some of his connections and contacts and experience, he's been able to put some good contributions. So if you were a Beyond the Mic subscriber, shortstops, which is David's contribution, which I've decided will be free for all. That'll be a free contribution. It will not be a paid contribution. And anytime David puts something out, we'll make it free for all, because I think that contribution is part of trying to balance things out between the paid content and not. But this particular thing that we're working on, and David took the lead on it and helped me, and you'll see a two-parter. And in part one will be on Tuesday, and part two will be on Wednesday, will be the first ever in the history of this show, of this program, Talking Mets top prospects list. And it's a little bit different. I have to say, the criteria is different. The way that David did it is different. And I think it'll generate some discussion. So David, it's going to be free for everybody. And again, those who pay for the content, because it does help support the show, I promise you, if you ever feel I don't do this, please, you could. I will take this seriously. I take customer feedback seriously. Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G. I want to make sure that you get value, you get it, and that you deserve an advantage over those who just sign up for free, because, I mean, ultimately, you get the commercial-free show, which is something. It's not the meat and potatoes. But what I want you to get is additional content that others don't. I think here, what David's providing is something that will help grow the audience, and is something that, in order to do it, you have to put it out there for everybody. Like, I put the McNeil piece out that included the Yankees. I thought that was something that could help grow the product. Now, there always is a little promotion attached to these pieces. So if you're somebody that wants to get a promotion with the Substack situation, it benefits those to kind of get on and get paid content and move forward. So that's the business of what we do. I hope you don't mind it. I like to be transparent, because for so many years, I've always said, hey, you know, it's free. And I know the commercials could be annoying, but again, you can't really sustain what I do. And believe me, I'm not going to Turks and Caicos on this money. Believe me, I haven't taken a vacation in years, ever. I haven't taken my honeymoon yet, because we put all our money into other things. My wife and I have been married since 2017, so there's a little inside baseball. But anyway, the first ever Talking Mets prospect list, hitters on Tuesday, pitchers on Wednesday. And then David and I will record a spot for everybody and talk about it. So it'll be the podcast as well. So that'll be fun. And I'm sure we'll bring up the draft and some of what's going on here. And I think that's going to not be on a Sunday show. I think that's going to have to be standalone, a little separate, because we have, I mean, this, it's, I have to figure that part out. And it's tough to do something like this, and it's a good All-Star break thing. And it was something that came up during the All-Star break, because normally we'd say, all right, let's do it during the break when there's no baseball. It didn't work out that way. Now you have the big series of the Braves, you have the Senga situation, you have the trade deadline. I mean, with my luck, something will break on Tuesday and Wednesday, and I'll have to scrap it and move it, because this is the time of the year where the news kind of dictates where you're going to go. I mean, that happens during the off-season, but it's a little bit different. You know that there's going to be dead time in the off-season. Then, of course, you're in the middle of watching football and a big trade happens. Now you got to go run up and do a show. So, but anyway, so that's some big news. If you're not familiar with Beyond the Mic, the Substack newsletter component to the Talking Mets podcast, go to substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. You can go to my X account, @TalkingMetsNoG, and you'll always see a post referencing it. And it'll be a lot of fun. So hopefully that's something that you enjoy. And I'd be very much looking forward to people's feedback on the list. There's actually, David outlines a criteria to the prospect list. And I read it. I blessed off on it. So if you want to get mad, you can get mad at David. But get mad at me too. When someone posts on Talking Mets or contributes to Talking Mets, unless it's a guest, you can't hold me accountable for a guest that has an opinion. But a bad guest, you could hold me accountable because I'm the one that bring them on. But you could call me a dope too if you want. So, and that's really why I've gotten away from the draft. Because unless I could get a contributor that really could provide something different than everything that's out there and you can read, I just don't want to do it. It's always tough. Ernie Dove's always a good guest. I have been meaning to get Ernie on and talk about, and we will before the year is out, the minor league system. But fortunately, at the end of May, I was already starting to begin my thought process of how am I going to get through the summer with bad baseball in a second division club? And I thought we'd be talking about trading off significant stars. And fortunately, June happened and OMG and Grimace and all that stuff happened. And here we are, less than 10 days to the trade deadline. And we're talking about the Mets adding, and we're talking about big series, and we're talking about being concerned about Kodai Senga making a start against the Braves, because it's not just him getting back into shape. These are damaging, punishing losses. And I'll tell you what, tomorrow is going to be a big game for the Mets. They really don't want to lose 3 out of 4 to Miami, because then it becomes a stub-your-toe weekend, becomes a stub-your-toe series, and then puts you in a spot where now the Subway Series, those games are pretty big. I mean, they're always big. But you could start getting yourself on a little losing streak at a time where a losing streak can put you in a bad spot. And you really are not in a position to go on a wild 700 baseball run again. Because as you get deeper into the pennant race, into the dog days of August, that's asking a lot of any club. Especially these guys. So anyway, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the latest edition of the Talking Mets podcast. Of course, you can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X @TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva @TalkingMetsPodcast.com. NoG, Mike Silva @TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And like I said, don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And of course, I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Who knows? There might be big news. But till then, and when it happens, take care, everybody.